So I love living in central New York. I love the four seasons. I love snow. I love the cold, which is a good thing living in this area. There were points in my life when I could have lived somewhere else, and I did not. But truth be told, the first 2 weeks of December are probably my least favorite. The days are pretty short. The nights are pretty long. Usually there's not enough snow to make it really beautiful. My desire to hibernate kicks in. I don't usually have my normal energy during December. And when my energy is down, it's harder to find hope. And after a year of a political agenda in charge that is not simply conservative, it is anti-humanity, it is even harder to find my hope. I'm trying to do some things to help myself, limit my social media, double down on my spiritual practice, read fewer headlines, and instead read more longer, in-depth articles. And I continue to turn to my liberal faith for hope and direction. Our liberal faith has sometimes been accused of being too thin. And it's an accusation I think we should take seriously. When the solution is that everyone should just be nice, it's a little hard to deal with the idea of evil. I suppose some people might want to turn to a faith that is more defined, where the moral distinctions are clear and where the lines are not so nuanced. But that does not work for me. There is something about this liberal faith that lures me on. When I came into the UU faith, I was introduced to James Luther Adams, sometimes referred to as JLA. He is a Unitarian Universalist theologian, and his life, his faith journey, took him from fundamentalism to humanism to liberal Christianity. He lived through World War I, World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War. You heard his writing earlier. He saw militarism at its worst, and he kept his faith and his hope. In fact, he doubled down on that faith. In 1976, Beacon Press, our UU Press, published On Being Human Religiously, Selected Essays in Religion and Society. And in this book was Adams' essay where he laid out his ideas of the five smooth stones of liberalism. Five smooth stones. One, possibility, revelation. Adams says that revelation is not sealed. It has not ended. There is always the possibility of knowing more and learning more, and revelation does not end. Two, respect. Relationships between persons rest on mutual and free consent, not coercion. How timely that now seems. Justice is the third. There is a moral obligation to the establishment of a just and loving community. He wrote, "A faith that is not the sibling of justice is bound to bring us grief." And he went on to say, "This love is not something that is ultimately created by us or that is even at our disposal. It seizes and transforms life, bringing us into a new kind of community that provides new channels for love and new structures for justice. This love does not prevent us from hurt or harm, but it can transform even the worst harm into something good. For Adams, this love is not nice or sweet or easy. It does not watch what it says for fear of upsetting the social order." He says the community of justice and love is not an ethereal fellowship that is above the conflicts and turmoils of the world. It is one that takes shape in nature and history, one that requires the achievement of freedom with respect to material resources, as well as with respect to spiritual resources. Indeed, the one kind of freedom is not fully authentic without the other. Freedom and justice and love require a body as well as a spirit. A white male theologian of the mid-century saying that theology, faith, justice require a body as well as a spirit. 4, agency or power. Good things don't just happen. We have to make them happen. And 5, hope. Liberalism holds that the resources, divine and human, that are available for the achievement of meaningful change justify an attitude of ultimate optimism or hope. Douglas Taylor, the minister at the Binghamton UU Church, summed them up this way. As a liberal religious community, we affirm that we are always learning, that there is always, always more truth unfolding in our understanding. We see that being together matters. Relationships are more important than doctrine. We further state that how we are together, how we are in relationship also matters. We are committed to the notion that to be good, we must do good. And finally, we always hope. These here stated in simple language are James Luther Adams' 5 smooth stones: possibility, respect, justice, agency, hope. Why 5 smooth stones? Why 5? Why stones? Why smooth? James Luther Adams pulled this metaphor from the Old Testament story of David and Goliath. Many of us know that story. The Israelites and the Philistines were locked in battle, and the Philistines sent out Goliath, a giant, who challenged the Israelites to send out their strongest fighter. And the winning fighter would win for their whole country, too. David, the youngest son of Jesse, slight and not yet fully grown, I think of my own son at 16, begged King Saul to let him go and fight, and Saul saw something in him and did so. A modern translation of what happens next. Then Saul outfitted David as a soldier in armor. He put his bronze helmet on his head and belted his sword on him over the armor. David tried to walk, but he could barely budge. David told Saul, "I can't even move with all this stuff. I'm not used to it." And he took it off. And then David took up his shepherd's staff, selected 5 smooth stones from the brook, and put them in the pocket of his shepherd's pack, and with his sling in his hand, approached Goliath. He ran quickly to Goliath and, surprising him, loaded up his sling and with one of the 5 stones and whipped it around and took aim and let the stone fly and fell the giant with one shot. So why 5? 5 is the number of strength and power. This power is what fueled the first global migrations of the birds and fish created on the 5th day of creation. Just in case we miss this connection with creation and the number 5, it says in 1 Samuel that when Goliath went to meet David in battle, David ran quickly to him. The word for ran, ruts, perhaps is how it's pronounced in Hebrew, is the same root word used to describe the movement of the creatures created on the 5th day. Why smooth? The constant washing of water of life wears down all our rough and crooked edges. Like river stones, this is a slow process, a journey, if you will, down the bumpy, twisted path of life. The stones would not fly so well or hit so hard if they were not smooth. But the process of smoothing a stone is long. I learned about that when we bought a rock smoother or rock polisher for my son. It was about 5 weeks of worrying in the basement. It's hard work smoothing down a stone. We talk about life smoothing out our rough edges, and we know that the process can be emotional and painful and draining. We can sometimes think we are losing our edge, but maybe we are not. Perhaps we are being made for just the right moment. And why stone? Clearly, for David, he needed a weapon, something that would land hard and kill his enemy. five smooth eggs would just not have worked out as well. In this day and age, we can think about the five smooth stones as being weapons of liberalism, but I would like to not weaponize our work just yet. I would rather call them tools, blessed, sacred tools that help us get the job done. Adam was a thoughtful writer. He picked the metaphor carefully. Five smooth stones. He lived through World War II. Before the war, as you heard, he studied in Germany with the Confessing Church, with Bonhoeffer and others who came to be part of the resistance. His was no theology created while he sat in an armchair and wondered about the evil out there in the world. He knew that the world had taken too long to fight the Nazis. He saw the horror of what happened. He did not write about the five smooth stones in his optimistic youth when the future was shiny and full of promise. He wrote it in his 72nd year. He had seen a lot. He had seen evil almost conquer the world, and he had seen goodness not quite win. He must have known that he was in the last phase of his life, but he did not write about how we had fallen short. No, he wrote about what will carry us forward. Possibility, respect, justice, agency, hope. These are the days that try us. I talked earlier with our children about the idea of Hanukkah and hope. We often think of hope and lament as opposites. James Luther Adams knew this was not true. Hope is being open to the universe and all that it has to offer, open to all of it, the beauty and the joy, the horror and the pain. We who live in a bubble of white privilege or any of the privileges that create a bubble around us may have the belief that hope is optimism. Hope is greeting each day with a smile. But for those folks who are part of marginalized groups, I suspect that they have always known that hope and pain and fear and joy all live together. Life is always a jumble, a mess, a confusion. I love the blues. The blues will almost always make me smile, which is kind of funny if you think about it. Why is a song about how hard life is, how it grinds you down, one that makes me smile? Because I am still singing. I am still making music. The hope is getting up and making that music, even in the face of unbearable pain. Hope and lament are not opposites. We can lament because we can hope, just as we can smile because we lament. How do we move, though, from lament to hope? Self-help books will give you a path, a set of steps designed for you to conquer lament and succeed with hope. I offer you another possibility. We, in fact, do not move from lament to hope. It's a false binary, folks. We hold lament close, deep. We feel it, we sing it, we dance it, we share it, we cry it, we let it move us, change us, lead us, and in that, there is hope. We can only do this with others and community, and this is the hope that Adams speaks of. Alone, each of us is swallowed up by lament. Together, in collaboration, in community, our individual laments weave into a communal hope. In 1948, the church James Luther Adams belonged to, the First Unitarian Church of Chicago, was trying to decide if it should desegregate. There were people who were saying yes and people who were saying no, and it came to pass that the Board of Trustees was trying to decide what to do. Adams sat on that board. He was passionate that the church should desegregate. And there was a man who just as passionately said that they should not. This board meeting went on into the early hours of the morning, and I am glad I was not the minister of that congregation. And at some point, Adams turned to this man and said, "What do you say the purpose of this church is?" Suddenly, everyone was quiet and everyone was listening. Everyone wanted to hear the answer to this crucial question. Probably the person who objected was listening especially hard to his own heart, as well as to the words he had heard from other board members through that long discussion. The board member who opposed opening the church to people of color finally replied, "Okay, Jim, the purpose of this church is to get hold of people like me and change them." We lament because what is happening in the world is awful. But that is not the end of hope. We have gathered here this morning, and there is hope in that. Maybe you will find a bit of respite here. There is hope in that. We have sages and wise ones among us, and there is hope in that. We have youth who will move this world forward in a way we cannot envision, and there is hope in that. We get hold of people and help them change, and there is hope in that. What is the purpose of this church? To get hold of people like you and me and change them. It has always been this way, and for that, I am thankful. Possibility, respect, justice, power, hope. That is something that will keep me going during these dreary months, dreary winter months, as I move from lament to hope and circle back around again. In a world without end, may this be so.